Hi, my name is Matt. Thank you, Richard, for introducing me and having us. Appreciate that. So tonight we have a very special speaker. Normally I like to say nothing, say thank you, let's go. But I'm grateful to be in the room tonight. I am so happy to introduce the man that's going to speak, that has been a force in this room, helping create it, and been here for many, many years for us, and has affected my recovery and many people's recovery, many families and lives, all in Al-Anon. So let's just get to it. I'd like to introduce Papa Willie. Thank you.
Whoa. I want to thank Matt so much for asking me to do this. It was just an honor when he made the phone call and said, hey, man, you want to do this? And I was just overwhelmed because it's easy to talk up in Canada somewhere, or down in Georgia or down in Texas. But to speak before your home group, it's much more difficult. I also want to thank my two boys, one here and one here, and my beautiful wife who accompanied me here today. And we drove up, we live down in a little town called Menifee. It takes us two and a half hours to get here, but it's well worth the ride. Also want to thank my sponsor, Dee, who's somewhere in those checkered squares up there, and all of my homeboys on Zoom, homeboys and girls tonight. See you guys. Okay, we're here. All righty. So, what is life? I want to start the way I always try to start is reading the 12th step. You think by now, as long as I've been here, I know it by heart, but I can't remember my name half of the time, so I'm not going to try to do it by heart. It says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Like my buddy Roger, I learned this from him. If I don't know where the word is, then look it up. Okay, spiritual awakening. It kind of means involved in shifts in consciousness from identifying with the physical body to recognizing a deeper connection with your soul. Another word that I use in there was principles. A fundamental truth or proposition that serves as a foundation for a system of belief, behavior, and for a chain of reasoning. One last little highlight of principle says a principle is a kind of rule, belief, or ideas that guide you. I want to say happy birthday to all the birthday takers. You guys, without you, it would be none of us. And so we welcome you, because someday, sometime, somewhere, one of you going to be up here replacing me. And this is how this thing works. I want to talk about what it was like, how I got here, what it's like today. I was born in a little town called Galveston, Texas. Many moons ago. In fact, it was 84 years ago tomorrow. So, yeah. And like we've done every year, these guys are so gracious that some of them get together every year before my birthday, and we meet up at Dish before we come here. And we did that tonight. Tonight, but since it's a unity meeting, some of the wives came along too. What an honor, you know, what an honor. A lot of these guys call me sponsor, so I must be doing something right for their wives to show up at my birthday, brother. So that's a good deal. That's a good deal. And I think if we can't develop a relationship with the families, we're not doing a good job of sponsorship. I mean, that sponsor, when your name come up, everybody in the household should have a warm feeling, because that's our role. We are here to help them, and by helping them and you, we help us. Okay. Family. My mom, it was three children, and my mom and dad, I had two sisters, one that was 2.5 years older, and one that's almost 11 years younger. Now, during those days, that sound like not sound like a big deal to some of you guys in today's time, but during the time when my mom was pregnant with my sister, everybody thought she was old, and she was only in her 30s. You know, and that's people who don't have children until they're in their 40s now. So that's what it was like with that family. With my father was a kind of a guy, he was stoic kind of a guy that always wanted his attention. And to this day, I never got it. And well, he's passed away when I was 19. So I had to have a lot of other fathers between that time. What happened? Okay. My alcoholism in my family, because we in the direct family, there was not a lot, but I had these two uncles. And because my mother and dad both were the oldest of two children of their families. And so my mother migrated from Louisiana to Texas. That's where she and my father met. And all of her siblings came to live with us. Now I had this one aunt who was my favorite aunt, who was married to a guy who was the nicest guy in the world until he got some booze in him. And once he had some booze in him, he was almost like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He would just flip to somebody mean and violent. Well, she would run away to our home for the refuge. So one day while she was in her refuge, I must have been 7, 8 years old, and she was hiding, and my aunt came downstairs, and they saw me standing by the door with a baseball bat, my little plastic bat. It's like, I'm gonna do something with it. And so she said, "What you doing?" I said, "Don't worry, AT, because we all, you know, we call our relatives that, not by their names, but I call her AT, that was mine. Don't worry, AT, if he come, Uncle Will come, I'll get him." And that was my beginning training in Al-Anon. I had this other uncle who was kind of my mom's oldest brother, but he was younger than her, who was my favorite uncle. And he lived in Kansas City. He was my idol. He was the kind of guy, he was a happy one. He was the kind of guy, he, my mom, and my dad, and his wife would all go out on Friday night. They all come back on Friday night, and he come back on Tuesday. And he was my favorite. He didn't know where he'd been, how he got there, and even how he got home. So, but he was my uncle. He lived in Kansas City. He was my idol. And he is the reason I look the way I look tonight. And I show up, guys. He's the way I look tonight. It's all because of him. I mean, he would send me these fancy suits back from Kansas City. One time he sent me one of his Mr. B collar shirts. You guys too young to know who Mr. B was. But anyhow, I had my little Mr. B shirt on, and all of my buddies, "Hey, Willie, can I wear your shirt?" Oh, yeah, they wore my Mr. B shirt every other day at school. And, man, I was the hottest thing in the classroom during that time. But that was my uncle. He's the reason I look the way I look today. I admired him. He was the kind of a drunk that you always love. He wasn't one that fought a lot. We get a little bit about the relationship with my dad. I talked a little bit about my father. He was a painting contractor, and I used to go to work with him. He took me to work with him when I was 8 years old. And I'd work with him, and I just kept seeking his attention and his approval. And so I would go out, and I'd paint this house and paint the side of this house with him. And I stand back and looking at it and think I've done a great job. And he's looking, he finds that one little spot. And my little heart would just crush. What message he got? He was trying to send me a message, "Son, you need to do the job right." But what I heard was that nothing I could do is ever good enough. And that was a mark that led that followed me for almost the rest of my life. And the other issue was that my older sister was kind of his idol. And today I know differently, but then I found out later that when he passed away back in many years ago, he had a stroke. And my younger sister said she was with him. She was 9. And so he ended up on my bed, and that's where he died. That's the last time he was alive, conscious in my. So maybe the guy did love me. Maybe that was my perception that he did not. So when you grow up like that, looking for love that you can't find, you start looking for it any place and sometime in the wrong places. And I swore at the time I got older that I would leave Galveston. You know, I'd either go to college, go to service, or leave. Well, I finished high school. Instead of taking those other options, I ran away with my high school sweetheart. I was 17, she was 16. And we went off to Denver, Colorado. And I'm going to tell you a little something about Denver. My grandson was here last night. He lives near Denver. And it's cold in Denver, guys. And I left Galveston, who has the same kind of climate here, in May with Bermuda shorts. So I'm getting to Denver, you know, and I'm looking at Denver and I see all that the Rocky Mountains got snow and stuff on them, and I'm still oblivious. And so I'm still doing pretty good into the summer. My mother and parents finally found me. They say, son, why don't you go to California where I have relatives? And like any honorary teenager, oh, mom and dad, that's why I left home. You guys always bugging me, trying to get me to do what you want me to do that I don't want to do. So any event, it seemed like in September, Labor Day, God in his infinite wisdom took that temperature and turned that switch all the way down to the 30s. I got on the phone with my mom the next day. Mom, what about some of them relatives you said you have in California? And that's how you guys got the kid here in California. Now, I left Denver that same day. So, because I'm not a cold weather person. So anyhow, that's the thing. While we were there, this was the beginning of my bad activity. My girlfriend and I started doing things that teenagers shouldn't do. And we had the first son. A year later, we had the second boy. Now listen, I'm 18, 19. And then the one more year later, we had the third son. And that was the boy that was the thing that changed my life. Because I grew up in the first Black Baptist church in the state of Texas. And we took that son and we put him up for adoption. I had committed the ultimate sin. So I walked, let me tell you what happened. They brought the baby to us down in LA County. Brought the baby to us. I held him. And about a minute or so later, the nurses come and said, hey, it's that time. We got to go now. And they took him. And when they took him away, this big hole in my gut left too. And my life started going sideways afterwards. My girlfriend and I, we never got back together. I went back to Texas I was here and she was sent for her to come back to California. And she decided that she didn't want to come back and she began to start a life with somebody else. And I started my journey, you know, of insanity. Alcoholism. Through my time of just whatever I was doing, I ran into the disease of alcoholism. And I don't know about you guys, but in my journey with the disease of alcoholism, I found out that not alcoholism taught me also that I not only didn't hear too well, I didn't see too well. Let me explain that to you. That's the Al-Anon in there. I got to explain it to you. And so this young lady walked in my place of business and said to me that, hey, I got to go to work tomorrow and I've got this little girl and I'm a hard worker and I'm not drinking tonight. What I heard was I'm a hardworking mom trying to raise this little 2-year-old on my own and I don't drink. That's not what she said, but that's what I heard. So later in that adventure, her mom passed away a couple of years later, a year or so later. And then I found out at the funeral, as when I found out that she did drink and drink a lot. So what happened next? We begin to talk and we begin to date, and like, I couldn't miss this opportunity to work with her to try to sober up an alcoholic. So we started to date. And shortly afterwards, you know, she came over on one Sunday, and then 9 years later, she was still there. So in any event, during this time, this was my real bout with the disease of alcoholism. I don't know about you guys, but I had this guy that lived above us that caused her to drink. Now, I don't know about in your household. I don't know who caused yours to drink, but he caused mine to drink. So I went upstairs one day, and that was in drinking, there was some infidelity. So I walked up in the room and I saw what I didn't want to see. I came right on back downstairs, and then shortly after this, she came in, and when she said to me, "I don't know what you thought you saw, but let me tell you what really happened." Rule number one. Minute the alcohol tell you what really happened, you run the other way. So by the end of the conversation, I not only didn't think I didn't see what I saw, but I also didn't hear what I heard. And so, and she convinced me that what I thought I saw, it didn't happen. But like any other Al-Anon member, I was full of drama. I was so angry and everything. I had my tantrum, I threw up and broke every dish in the house. Damn, guess we had to clean it up the next day. She didn't. And so I cleaned up all of the broken glass and stuff and stepped around. And the next day we went to Vegas and got married. That was going to fix the problem. That was going to fix, my boy, I've never heard this. That was going to fix the problem. But it's not his mother I'm talking about either, so. So, but that'll fix the problem, he said. So one other story, Ron Reeves, my dear friend, is not here with us anymore. And he's always loved this story. I thought disease of alcohol was dealt with analytics. So I thought if she knew how she acted and what happened during the time she was drinking, that she wouldn't drink so much. So I came up with this clever idea, duh. Me come up with a clever idea, duh, 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 no. I came up with this idea, if maybe I'll tape one of these sessions. So I came to her and I said, you drank, if you knew how you acted when you drank, you may not drink so much. What about we tape one of these sessions? She looked at me like, duh. But I said to her, but I'll buy your favorite drink. And some cigarettes. Oh, she went with that right away. So I bought the favorite drink. I came home, and this was during the time before we didn't have videotapes then. It was just cassettes. So I walked in, I came, knocked on the door, and we put the little, she had a 2-year-old, we put Tweet to bed and put on some soft music. And I put the her favorite drink down and put the 7-Up next to it because that's what she liked with her drink. And we said, and I put the soft music and we started to play, and she started reaching for the bottle. I say, wait a minute. Testing 1, 2, 3, because I got to get this evidence, guys. So anyhow, we start the evening off, and like it ended up like every other evening we had had before. Whereas the more the alcohol progressed, the less important I got. It was so bad to where at the end of the day, she liked cartoons. Bugs Bunny was more important to me because she was moved away from the couch, all this romance that I put together, and was on the floor watching cartoons until she passed out the next morning. What happened? The only difference now is I got evidence. I got the evidence of this. I've got the solution to our problem. So anyhow, that ain't the solution they talk about in the big book, guys, but I got the solution to our problem. And so in any event, the next morning, I was just pacing the floor until she, and then she got up about, 9:30, 10 o'clock, I don't know what time it was. And so I said, you want to know what happened last night? She said, what? I said, let me put the tape on. So I put the tape on and she said, I did that. So yeah, I did that too. I said, yeah, wait to hear some of them other things you did. So anyhow, we went done. And at the end of the day, she swore that she would never, ever, ever drink again before, again. That lasted about, 10 hours? Because about her friend picked up about 2 o'clock. She came in that night drunker than she's ever been before. But that's the night she gave me the gift. Because the very next day, I went into my office and only, I don't know about you Al-Anons, that how your friends were, how they bear with you after a while. But mine was all look at me and they run the other way because they didn't want to hear what I had to say. Because my words was always, guess what she did today. And they got tired of hearing that. So any event, the next day I walked into my office and this friend of mine always kept this book down here. And I didn't know what she was reading, but this book. And she said, Willie, I've been listening to you, but I got a place for you. I said, where's that? She said, there's a meeting down at 7:30 down on Wilshire and St. Andrew's Place. It starts at 7:30, you show up there. So I was out of options, so I was willing to do whatever they asked me to do. So I showed up there and said, I have a friend that's gonna meet you there. Now, if any of you guys see, I don't know the guy's name, but if you see him, here it is almost 37 years later, and I haven't met him yet. So anyhow, I show up at this meeting. You guys didn't get that part. Okay. I showed up at the meeting and I drive up in the back and I didn't know what kind of meeting it was. I had, I'm from Compton, guys. I had never heard of Al-Anon. All I heard of in the hood was AA, and the only reason the guys talked about AA because they didn't want to go to jail. So they would go to an AA meeting to keep from going to jail. So that's what I knew about 12-step recovery. So I drive up to this place in Wilshire, and I see all these guys high-fiving and cigarette smoke everywhere, and you guys know who they were. Then I walked upstairs, and they had these kids with spiked hair, green hair, and they were acting a lot better than my kids ever acted, and those were the Alateen. And then I walk in this room, and you guys remember my history. I'm still looking for Mrs. Wright. So I walk into this Al-Anon meeting. Here it is, almost 37 years ago, and there was not many people in those rooms, not even many guys in the room, but especially nobody in the room looked like me. But I walked in that room, and man, I was in heaven. Oh my God. I walked around in the back of the room, and I sit in the back of the room trying not to look like a newcomer. And you guys know nothing looks more like a newcomer than a newcomer. So I sit down between these two ladies. At the end of the meeting, I didn't hear nothing they said at the meeting. At the end of the meeting, the lady said, at that time, we used to have these little cards that you write your name on. So at the end of the meeting, I'm ready to get up and leave pretty sadly because I'm in heaven right now. I'm going to leave this place. And they said, wait a minute, let us put our number on. Give you our number. You know, they wanted to do a 12-step call, not the kind of 13-step call that I was trying to make. So in any event, some of you guys, it take you forever to make those first phone calls. Oh, not the kid, man. 6 o'clock in the morning, man, I was up. I was up and I was on it. You know, I made the one phone call and the lady said, and she was Spanish from Spain. And she had this very romantic kind of Spanish kind of talk. Just hearing her voice was enough for me, you know. And so she said, oh no, call my friend. Cause I gotta go to work. So I called a friend up and I started my little 13-step rap and then she 12-stepped me that day. So some of you guys took forever to get a sponsor. One day. And if I had known then, like you guys say, that men should have men sponsors and women should have women sponsors, you guys would have a different speaker here tonight. So anyhow, what did those sponsors do then? What she did was said, Willie, this is Tuesday. There's another meeting tomorrow night down on Wilshire and Plymouth. Show up there. Didn't ask me till I come. Could I come? She said, show up. And I was like a little tin soldier. Yeah, I showed up. So it was a great thing because I heard Dr. Paul and Maxine that night. The next time she said, well, we do it on Thursday night. There's another meeting on Thursday night at Cedar Sinai. Show up. Now, guys, I'm showing up and I'm living in Compton at the time now. And my people, my friends in Compton say, you going where? So anyhow, I'm going to meetings. And so on the Friday come, I'm thinking, well, have I done all the month? No, I started Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah, Friday. Friday says a great meeting on Fountain in Fairfax. Don't you people ever take any time off? I say the Saturday's coming up. And I know I've got some time on Saturday to do. She said, oh, Willie, great. A minute, there's a meeting on Hyperion and Rowena. It starts at noon. It's called Living in Sobriety. Be there. Didn't ask me, could I come? She's pretty rude. Didn't ask me, could I come? Said, be there. So anyhow, I showed up there. And then I'm thinking, well, I got my meeting for the day. I'm leaving the parking lot. She said, hey. There's a meeting tonight, a chapter 9 meeting tonight up in La Cañada. I say, La Cañada, who? La Cañada. And if you looked at me, Annie, are you telling me to go to La Cañada? And so I'm up here tonight, right? So I'm go up to La Cañada. I show up at that meeting, and that was that's where I met Pat and Candy too. Jack and Leslie, I met them up there. And Ron and Betty. So we all used to go up to that, West John and Marcia. Yeah, we all used to go up there. And that's 30-some years ago. And then I'm thinking there's a Sabbath day they take off on Sundays. Oh, no. You got to show up at the Riverside Hospital on Sunday night. And that was the beginning of my gift. Because I don't know about you guys, but I had this sponsor that if I was sitting next to her, my hand automatically went up. My hand went up. So they said that. So they say on Sunday night, we need some people to make coffee. And that Sunday night meeting had over 150 people in it, maybe. And so we had to make coffee. And us Al-Anons, you know, we're going to make the best coffee in the world. We don't want to be outdone by that group before us. So what did that do? As my sponsor would always say, Bob would not share with me, but he shares with me all the time. What would we do? During the week, I had to pick up the telephone and call them because we got to make this good coffee. So I called them up. And what did that do? It got me to know them. It got me used to talking to them and asking for help. And so Bob would say that every experience is a spiritual one. And he also tell me that if it's good, our egos get too big. But if it's bad, as we think it's bad, we get to learn something. So it's a win-win situation. Every experience is a spiritual experience. So that's part of the beginning of my recovery. Because when I say that, I'll have another incident that I hope I don't forget to tell you, but that happened during that process. And one of the things I learned, oh, did I tell you about Monday? No, I got to go to Monday before I tell you what I learned. Monday, I'm thinking I've been to seven meetings, eight meetings in 4 days or 6 days. I don't know how many days it's been. I know I've been to a lot of meetings. And the Monday night meeting, I walk into this Monday night meeting over on Edgemont and Franklin. I walk in the door and I stuck my hand out. And the little lady met me at the door. Forgive me, guys. I'm getting a little touched with this. The little lady met me at the door and said, we don't shake hands here. We hug. That was their grandmother. That's these kids' grandmother. She taught me. And she said, we don't hug here. And she took the privilege of saying that she was the one that taught me, her big son-in-law, how to hug. So, any event, And she was responsible for a lot of the men coming to this meeting. And when she passed away, with the help of all of my buddies here, because their mom was in the hospital, we gave her the best going away I thought that one could have given. Because she said to me from my hospital bed, "Thank you so much for being a good father to my grandsons, all four of them. Not just this one, all four of them." And because we never used the word step in that house. They were all my boys. I tell people about my boys. They see them. And they say, "Oh." I say, "Yeah, they are my boys. You know, I raise them, I feed them. And we don't have no room in this house for step. Because step is negative. My son's is positive." So, and I just heard from the middle boy earlier today. But in any event, these kids grew up, and we gave my mother-in-law her good going away, and I'm forever grateful for that. Program. These are Willie's words for recovery. It's my four S's. They're not written in the service manual. They're not written in the literature, not conference approved, but they really approved because I'm the one talking tonight. So in any event, I want to start with the four S's. The first one is sponsor. The second one is steps. The third one is service. And the fourth one is serenity. If you do those things in that order, you'll be standing up here one day helping somebody else recover too. But this is what I feel is the basics of our recovery. Couple of things about, I'm going to talk about the program now. I came here and I started doing the service work. Another spiritual experience. I started working with the San Fernando Valley Convention very early, my first year here. During that time, I worked five or six consecutive years, and the convention voted me to be the chair for the LNN chair for the next year. We were all set, everything was done. Then someone looked at the rule book and said, "You have to have a different zip code to be the chair." I had to have a Valley zip code to be the chair. And I couldn't, so I had to let someone else do it. I was down for a minute, but God, in every experience I say is a spiritual experience. I showed up February at the area committee meeting. And I'm just sitting there, and someone said, "He doesn't know it yet," because they had chosen me to be the Alateen sponsor, Alateen coordinator for Southern California on the World Service Board. So what God had a bigger plan than my plan, and I have to always remember that. My plan is finite. God's plan is infinite. So I can't forget that. So as I began I thought that I was going to be on the road for the chair of the convention. Instead, I got to be Southern California Alateen sponsor, went on the, you know, area service board. What happened from that? Okay, I got to be the Alateen sponsor for the 1995 International Convention that had over 1,000 kids from all over the world. They all spoke different verbal languages, but they all spoke the same language as the heart. Chris is laughing because he was there. He knows he was there. He was a teenager then. So that's what it was like. And then that was my beginning of the service at the service structure. Let's talk about this meeting. Went to the chapter 9 and I told, let me back up again. I want to talk about how I became what happened when I was asked to be the Alateen sponsor. Okay, I was going to this Sunday night meeting, and a couple of people at the meeting was the sponsor, and they said that they was going to have to give it up. And so they asked me. And so I said, let me talk to my sponsor. You know, I thought that I was going to get out of it. So anyhow, I called him and I said, guess what they asked me to be an Aladdin sponsor? And her response was, whoa, Willie, that would be great. Duh, you know, I didn't expect that. I learned very fast. If I didn't want to do something, I'd ask my sponsor. So in any event, don't you guys take that for granted, because I'm going to hold you to it. If I ask you to, if you need to do something, you ask me, I'm going to tell you what to do. So, okay. But that was what it was like. And because I don't know if these sponsors go to sponsor school or something. I don't know what how they learned this shit, but they show how to do stuff better than you do. And anyhow, they started me on this road. And then that's when this meeting came about. And my sponsor said, you know, Willie, you need to go up to the go up there and help them get that meeting started. So Pat came to me and he said, hey, Willie, we want to start this meeting. I know you're involved with World Service. Can you help us? We started the meeting, and that's how the 7 o'clock Let's Rock got started. 32 years ago? Yeah, John, you 30. Yeah, 32 years ago. And it was 4, 5, 6 guys in the very beginning. You're looking at the lone member who's still standing, who comes here on a regular basis. But this meeting has produced, and my friend Ron Reeve used to talk about it all the time. He said, 7 o'clock Rock, 7 o'clock Let's Rock is the best goddamn meeting in the world. That was his words. And he said, if you don't feel that about your meeting, you need to get a different one. And that's what I feel. Look at the world, you know, the number of men and the messages that's been carried all over the U.S. and Canada. By this guy here, by that guy there, by that guy here, and there's a couple other ones in the back here I thought I saw, who carried this message, Oscar, who, you know, Diego, who carried this message all over the U.S. and Canada. And now we got some dear friends here, my friend here, that come down to hang out with us. We have Zoom buddies. Steve is from Maryland. And then my buddy Dustin here, he's a big blue Michigan guy, and he just gives me a hard time. These are my Zoom buddies. I see them on Zoom. So we hang out on Zoom on Thursday nights. So, but that's what it was like. Talk a little bit about the recovery and why it's important. Oftentimes, newcomers get stuck in saying that I can't get past step one and step two, and my question to them is, how many meetings have you gone to? And the reply a lot of times, I've been to 3 or 4 or 5 meetings. I say, when you went to your first meeting, you actually took step one, because you went to your first meeting. We diagnosed you because we told you, we told you that your life was, we didn't tell you that, you knew that, that's why you showed up. But nobody went to an Al-Anon meeting or an AA meeting or any other 12-step meeting all happy and joyous to go to a meeting. When they go to a meeting, their lives are unmanageable. And that's the second half of step one. And what happens with that? We tell you that we have a solution for that. You know, we have a solution. And we tell you that solution is you can't do a GD thing about alcoholism. You can't do a thing about it, but all you can do is know that it exists and try to do the best you can and not trying to fix it, because your fixing this is going to break it worse. And if you understand that language, you're in the right place. So anyhow, that's my addition to step one. Step two, if you came back a second time, you've heard something that you heard in step one. So you believe that something in these rooms can restore you to sanity, else you wouldn't come back. So one and two is done. Now go on to your 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 and get this stuff done. But you've done one and two if you go to 2 or 3 meetings. It's not hard to figure out. I know I'm an accountant, but that's not hard to figure out. So, okay. Service work. I've never done a service that I felt worse when I was done with it than it was before. Now, I felt pretty bad sometime doing it, doing the process, because sometimes you can get beat up pretty good, but I never felt worse. They used to have here, and Bruce and I spoke at the last one, at Southern California Allotene Conference. I talked about Allotene and my participation in Allotene. I went to 24 straight, and then John came along and I moved out of the way so he could go. But, and then the last one, Bruce and I spoke. They just recently started up again. And my thought was that's a fellowship in Southern California, especially in California, that where the kids have done, I've seen nothing but miracles happen as a result of it. And I knew that my thoughts is that if you take away the one motive, impotence, because SCAC is a combination of a weekend away from us crazy parents, and it's a weekend for the kids to be with themselves, and it's a weekend where we could see the leaders become leaders. That's the piece that was missing. It was the piece that was missing, because in school, there's a lot of, in high school and things, it's a lot of judgment. And if you're not in the right clique, you don't get to be that. But those kids in Allotene, you can have, you know, a broken arm. We had a kid come and Patty used to bring him, used to come in a wheelchair that was a paraplegic. She brought him on Friday, and we didn't have to worry about him the rest of the day. I mean, she didn't have to see him until they got ready to leave. That's how unconditional love these kids prevail. And they learn to be leaders. Their goal all the time, ultimate goal, is to become part of the SCAC committee. And they have reached something that has been a goal that would not be attained if they had not been part of this group. We've seen Earn Turners come out of it. We've seen, these Bruce and his wife, daughter was on the same committee, that last committee we were on, Ginger, and she spoke here a while back. And she talked about what she's done, and she's traveled all over the world. These kids sometimes would not have a chance if they don't be for a space like this program. Now it's rebuilding itself again. It's rebuilding itself again. But as Lord said in this book, and I don't want to read a lot of it, but it talks about there's going to be some people that come up with great new ideas to only find that they've only been tried before and did not work. We can always count on these concepts to bring us back to the center. So now I'm going to move forward to the service stop. I became the first GR for this group, became the first district rep in this area. Nobody had held any of these positions that looked like me. And so I went down to the area assembly as I was the area district rep, and I was just going just to the assembly. And I walked in, and one of the ladies said to me, "Willie, why don't you become, are you going to stand for delegate?" I said, "Oh no, I may stand for the treasurer or something like that. That's something I know how to do." I said, "What makes you think you so got your ego so big that you're going to get elected to anything? You're just supposed to stand. Not whatever happens, it's not your doing. It's a God thing." So anyhow, I put my hand up. I went up front, and about 13 of us up there, and they all had these great resumes and told them, tell everybody what they had done. I just told them my sponsor made me do it. and so it got near the end of the thing, and it got two names up, and mine was one of them. What the hell is going on here? And eventually, at the end of the day, nobody got two-thirds, so the top two names, they put in a hat, and mine came out. And I got to represent you guys from 1996, 97, 98, and 99. it was a good deal because I had a bunch of my buddies was DRs, so we all go to lunch at the break time. But Jack was a DR at the time. I know Roger may have been a GR. Lee was a DR. So at lunchtime, we'd all have a big party, you know, and I'd go back to the assembly and get beat up a little bit, but that's okay because I had my buddies with me. So any event, during my process, and some of you guys, Jack and Phyllis Hills were members of this, and they started the chapter nine, not the chapter nine, the parent meeting on Sunday, I mean on Saturday morning. They asked me, said, Willie, are you going back to World Service? We can't get them to register our group. Can you do something about it? So I walked up to the executive director then, because it was his first full conference too. I say, Rick, I got a group back in Southern California that wants to register as a parent group. And he said, oh, we don't want to do all these specialized groups. And so I say, wait a minute, Rick. We just passed the Survivor to Recovery on the floor, and you was jumping up and down. What makes you think that the parents are less important than the kids, than the children? He said, well, I guess you have a point there. So I got the privilege of registering the first parent meeting in Southern California. It may have been the first one, I don't know, but I know it's the first in Southern California. So that's what we do here. We do here, because I was afraid to death to come up here, because I came from down from the hood. And when I was up here, I told my sponsor at the time, I said, even the cop cars up there is white, and you want me to go there, you know? And so, but yeah, I'm here. But I would, you know, I came up, but boy, I would, at 7, we ended at 8:30. At 8:31, man, I was back on the highway, back to Compton, boy, because I didn't do too much hanging out then. Later on, we started going to, up to the street here, up to, we started across the street, and Jack didn't like their milkshakes and something, so we dished them and started going down to the Hill Street, and that's when the fellowship began to come. That's when this meeting began to grow the way it is. So I want to say to you, commitments, meetings, and what we learn here is to keep a commitment. If you say you're going to do something, do it. Try to do it. Al-Anon has they call it the three triangle. And the three legs of the triangle, I have my interpretation of them. I use the steps. And the steps, I see the steps as courage. We learn a little bit about the traditions. And we learn about ourselves. We learn to listen to you. And we begin to have some compassion for you. When we add the steps, tradition, and we take those two together and portion them along with the concepts, we develop an extraordinary amount of character. And that's what we look for. And step 12 says that, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others, and we get to practice these principles in all our affairs. Not some of them, not just when we're in the meeting, but when we're at home too. We get to practice these principles in all our affairs. Al-Anon says they want the best version of me. Not Willie's version of me. They want the best version of me. And that's what I get to bring to you. And with that, I want to thank you guys for being here. I want to thank Brett so much for asking me to share tonight. And all of my buddies on Zoom, DIC up there, my sponsor, I'm going to speak about my current sponsor, who Bob. I see D, you up there. I talked to you earlier today. Thank you. My sponsor, Bob, after I was here about four years, he began to walk with me and talk, take me through the steps and do all the things that's necessary that a sponsor needs to do. He became the father that I had missed. What he also did was, you heard me share that about my son that I put for adoption. This world is a beautiful place. Michael, after 47 years and 4 days, I got a call from him. I tried my best to find him, but I couldn't. He called and said, hey, I'm coming. I want to meet you. I'm going to come and hang out with you. I say, well, I can't see you today. It's a Thursday night. I'm going to my meeting, and I'm going away this weekend with the 52 guys. He said to me, he said, I got a question for you. I said, what? Two questions. He said, who in this family had red hair and freckles? I say, oh, that was easy. My uncle's son, the favorite uncle who teach me how to wear these good suits. My uncle's son is the one who had the red hair and freckles. His second question is, why did you give me away? And I thought about that. I said, I don't have the answer for you that, but I come back, I will. So we went up to the San Lorenzo, 52 guys, and we erased the stock in Kleenex that weekend. All my homeboys here, did you see? So they all these hockey men. Oh, no, not today, not that day. Kleenex box was in the middle, and there was no tissue wet, dry. All the tissues was wet. But what did that do for me? That taught me that I had a love and support from the men who had guarded me for all these years. So I came back home, and I was ready for him to either spit in my face or hug me. I came back, I say, son, your mom and I were teenagers when we had you, and we was having a hard time. And the best decision we could make at the time was what we did. Mr. and Mrs. Jones is your real parents. They're the ones sit up with you and had those bloody noses and those things. But your mom and I, well, I can't speak for her, but I can speak for me. I can just be the best dad that I could be to you, thus going forward. And that's all I got. And that's what I get to do. I don't get to try to undo what's been done, because that's done. But I can do what I'm going to do thus forward. Genetics is phenomenal. Here's a kid that I hadn't never met and seen, but he had a kidney disorder, and he actually was with an organization called Donate Life that he actually went around the world and talked just like his dad is talking right this moment. He called me and said, Dad, you're getting older. I know you're getting older, and I got the little brother. I want to spend some time with him, so I'll be there when you're gone. He and Miho went out that Thursday night, and they had a great time. I come back, say, how'd you do, son? Oh, man, I had a good time, my big brother. Next morning, March 5th of 2013, I guess it was, I got a call. 15, 16, I don't know what me it was. Michael's kidney has failed. He was in a coma. But it was after he and his brother had the time. It was after he had done all the work that he had done, just like his dad is doing here in Al-Anon. And we had no contact with each other for 40 plus years. So if that's not a miracle, is that not a God taking care of us? We can't do it for ourselves. He was at Cedar Sinai. I knew he wasn't going to make it. I gave him a hug. Said, son, I love you. Came home to you guys. 7:30. I think it was, I don't know what the date was, but 7:30, I was in the meeting. I took my 26-year-old cake at 7:30. 7:30, he passed away. But what happened? Donate Life. He was the first, he rolled in the first Rose Bowl float for that organization. He talked around the world for the organization. Huntington Hospital hoisted a flag in his honor that they allowed me to do it. If that ain't a 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th step, I don't know what is. Because I don't have the restless moments and the guilt and this big hole in my gut that I had when I got here before I met you guys. I'm whole. I can stand straight with my back is not hurting, but I can stand straight and I can look in your eyes and I see that same thing that that you see in mine, me too. And with that, thank you, 7 o'clock, let's rock. Papa Willie's out of here.